Hey CFRC listeners, in celebration of International Women's Day, local icon Miss Emily and the Kingston Music Office are hosting an International Women's Day showcase on March 7th at the Broom Factory, with support from your friends here at CFRC. Experience a showcase celebrating the remarkable talents of women and non-binary artists in the Kingston community. Miss Emily will be hosting the night with feature performances from Clara Smallman, Julia Finnegan, Kyra Daniel, and Savannah Shea. Stay for the fireside chat exploring songwriting, creativity, and the challenges of navigating the music industry as underrepresented voices, as well as a showcase of women-led businesses in the Kingston community. It's sure to be the event of the season. Doors are at 7 p.m., and tickets can be found at ticketscene.ca.
Hi, we're Short Rock to Pluto, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
It is 7 o'clock, and you are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, streaming on the web at www.cfrc.ca. We are broadcasting from the basement of Carruthers Hall at Queen's University in Kingston on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land. And you are listening to Prison Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in to Prison Radio this Wednesday evening on CFRC 101.9 FM. We have a really great show for you tonight. I'm one of your hosts, Malka, and we're going to be sharing an interview with former political prisoner Eric King. Eric King is an anarchist, a father, a poet, an adoring Swiftie, he said so, not me, and an undying anti-fascist. He was convicted for firebombing an empty federal building in solidarity with the Ferguson uprising following the police killing of Michael Brown in 2014. Can't believe it's already been so long. And Eric spent almost 10 years in prison. He was released just over a year ago. He survived significant violence and abuse by guards and the system as a whole while inside. He was held extensively in solitary confinement, but he continued to participate in social movements, including co-editing with Josh Davidson the book Rattling the Cages, Oral Histories of North American Political Prisoners. Really enjoyed speaking with Eric. He's gone through a lot and he's done a lot, and he's also a really friendly, laid-back dude that we really enjoyed speaking to. In the interview, he talks about the work he's doing since his release with the Bread and Roses Legal Center. He talks about patriarchy and misogyny that he witnessed and experienced in prison, about his forthcoming book, about his survival of the ADX Supermax Federal Prison in Colorado, and just a lot more, also promoting for everyone who's listening and who's interested to stay in touch with prisoners, remember prisoners, and connect with political prisoners. So, yeah, so that's what we've got in store for you today, our interview with Eric King, and hope you find it really interesting.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Cause this girl is gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's gonna stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. I know.
So thanks so much for joining us on Prison Radio here on CFRC. In the interview today, we're hoping to ask you and talk to you a bit about your experiences and your struggle, as well as the books that you've been involved in and the work that you have been doing. But when we do interviews, we always like to start by asking folks, what is your relationship with prisons and abolition?
Yeah, so my relationship with prison is that I just got out a year ago. I did approximately 10 years for an act of solidarity with the Ferguson uprising after the cops killed Michael Brown. The last 2 years of my sentence were served in the federal supermax, ADX, the most restrictive prison in the country. And since I've been out, I've been working as both a paralegal to help keep people out of prison and as an activist to help raise awareness and bring notice to what's happening inside prison.
Okay, so you work as a paralegal at Bread and Roses. I did want to ask you what you do at Bread and Roses, and maybe if you could share like what the organization does generally.
Yeah, working at Bread and Roses is one of the things in my life I'm most proud of right now. Bread and Roses is a trans and queer ran civil rights law firm. And so we do things like criminal defense, where we will actively try to keep people out of the justice system. And then we also do social causes, like we do name changes for trans folks in Denver. We got legislation passed called Tiara's Law, which made it easier for transgender people with felonies to get their names changed. Right now we're pushing through the Trans Bill of Rights that would guarantee access to housing, medical care, better schooling for transgender people in the state of Colorado. So Bread and Roses is amazing. It's ran by and started by Z Williams and Erica Unger. And Z handles most of the social justice programs and Erica handles most of the criminal law. And then I bounce with where they need me most. They were a part of my civil rights team when I was in ADX. And they came and visited me and did legal calls with me all the time. And thankfully, we hit it off. And they gave me a career fresh out. Like 4 days out of prison, I had a career. And since then, I've been able to like develop skills and talents to become like a really like qualified paralegal. And I get to do things like go into prison and visit people, go to court and sit next to our clients and make sure that, you know, that they're feeling safe and talk to their families. And things like that that help me feel like I am doing something for those facing repression. And it's just a really beautiful thing. Like, please look up Bread and Roses Legal Center, wherever you are. Donate.
That's amazing. And there has not been a time, certainly in my lifetime or in kind of modern world, that trans people have been valued in the way that they should in a broader way, but now is a moment where things are getting extra bad. How's that been, like, how have you seen that impacting the work that you've been doing?
It's been ultra sad. Honestly, I'm speaking from the perspective of a cis hetero male, white male. So I've got like all the cards lined up for me to succeed, and I see what's happening to my trans family, and it's terrifying. It's hard to put myself in those shoes, but like, it's just been all about empathy, trying to take less, give more. There's been lots of protests and things like that, which I'm grateful for. There's been like trans marches, like the dignity marches and things. A lot of them are organized by Z. They are a relentless organizer. And then we've also seen like an uptake in like know your rights training, civil defense stuff, like knowing what can legally happen, knowing what to do if you do get arrested and those things. But we've also had to like give people bad news. Like there's been people wanting to change their name on their birth certificate or a passport. And they're not letting you do that anymore. They will take that passport. The feds will. And most likely put your name in a database for some sort of future repression if they can get away with it. And so we've had to like have hard talks with some people as well that like, this is real. And if we don't force it to get better, it's not gonna get better. And so I've just been trying to offer whatever solidarity, support, or love I can. It's never enough. It's usually just by doing radio programs and podcasts, but just promoting that cause that like they need us, and like we don't need to ask them what they need. Just show up for trans people, give them love, give them tangible solidarity.
I think that's a message we can definitely get behind.
I mean, yeah. It's I don't know. Speaking as someone in Canada, I can say we don't have that guy as our president, but it affects us big time.
It's hard and scary. Like, I've got a trans daughter, and they're just like figuring out their identity. Like, they're finally feeling safe and comfortable because Denver's about as safe as it gets, and there's still pockets of hate. And they're watching the president every day, like, go out of his way to just attack this ultra-marginalized group. And the level of cruelty, like, kids shouldn't have to experience cruelty from the highest levels. They should experience safety and support and, like, helping them find their way on their journey towards adulthood. Not immediate repression the second they're making choices for themselves. It's just terrifying, and it's not fair to them. It's not fair to anyone. Like, this is a cruel situation going on.
Yeah, it really is. And it's true. It's not there, like, on, you know, where we're at, things are not to that point, but we're in this sort of similar trajectory. Unfortunately, lots of provinces in Canada have been trying to pass new laws criminalizing transness and, you know, all the kind of entry level discriminatory kind of legal stuff around women in sports and children in school and parental rights and all that kind of stuff. So the solidarity on that front is definitely necessary, like no matter where you are, basically.
What is it like for you? You got out and then you started working, you said 4 days later, for Bread and Roses, and then went back into the prison for work. So what was that like?
So with that, I was working with Erica, and Erica's just this amazing lawyer who could be making millions, but instead just gives her time. Not a public defender, but something similar in Colorado. And so Erica did a really amazing job. I don't want to say prepping me, but making sure I was safe. She didn't let me like rush back. I wanted to rush in. Like, let's go. And there was pushback there at first. And then, like, we just gradually worked towards it. And there was lots of, like, informed consent of, like, I need you to know, I'm not going to baby you, but I need you to know that, like, these are the things that can happen. And, like, these are the things that can make you feel hurt or scared or triggered. And so the first jail we went into, it's, like, they're county jails. These are people getting ready for prison or trial. And so it was hard. Like, it was hard walking beside the cops. It was hard, like, having the doors electronically open, like, the noises. We can see into the different pods where, like, the prisoners are. And so that was difficult. One of the times there was a lockdown, and so we couldn't leave. And I basically had, like, a mental breakdown. I don't know what it's called when, like, you stop being able to breathe and just start sobbing relentlessly. And Erica just had to, like, do their best to help me focus on other things, like calming things. And so since then, it hasn't been as hard. That's always difficult. I always cry afterwards, just thinking, like, I know how hard it is to stay there. I know how hard it is to have your future on the line. I know how hard it is to not have that power, that powerlessness over your own life. And so it's hard in that way from, like, an empathy level. But it makes me feel powerful as well, because I get to walk in. They can't keep me. I get to walk out, and so every time I walk out, it empowers me. I feel like I'm getting one over on them. Like, you didn't want me to do this. You gave me all these extra charges, and now I get to walk in and out as much as I please, and you can't stop me. So it's a duality, like a lot of life, a little good, a little bad.
I can imagine many people would, you know, not want to ever put themselves in that situation again. So it's
and
impressive.
They would be justified, right?
Yeah, of course.
That wouldn't make them soft or anything like that. It would just be like their level of healing. But mine just happens to be almost like playing a prank on the justice system. Like, well, I get to like mess with him. So like, I get to sit at a table. Like when we do trials, like you can see me right now.
Yeah, our listeners can't. Do you want to? Oh. Yeah, you want to say a little bit?
I mean, I am just covered head, face, body, and tats. I got pink braids. I'm expressing myself in color, and so I get to sit at that table. And like, just look at the prosecutor, look at the judge, and like, they can't stop me. This is my legal right to help these people. And it feels good. Like, that feels really good.
Well, and I can imagine from the perspective of the person that you're there to support and fight for, when the state comes after you, that is such a lonely feeling to be facing the state trying to lock you up and to have someone there beside you who has been through that. I imagine it's pretty helpful.
No, it is. And you can tell like their attitudes change a bit, like when I'm in there with Erica versus like them by themselves. Because there's a lot of misogyny in jail and prison. But like, you're not going to bulldog someone that looks like you. You're not going to bulldog someone that's been through what you're going through and most likely significant worse. So they do, I don't want to say there's a level of like respect, but there is a level of, there's a level of respect. That's exactly what it is, actually. And it's better for the parents as well, the family, because I can talk to them about, like, not easing their hurt, but explaining how, like, their family member's life isn't over just because they're inside. They can still experience love and joy and fear and happiness and friendship. It just is in a different form. Mm-hmm. And it's on us to help them, like, stay human and help them be who they are as opposed to who the prison wants them to be. And I have found that to, like, not all the time, but a lot of times be really helpful. So I picture what I would want my mom to hear. What would I want someone to say to my mom that would at least help her know that, like, this hurts, but it's not over. Like, this is not a death sentence, unless it is a death sentence. And then we just got to love them until we figure it out. We don't have the death penalty in Colorado. That's why I felt okay making that joke.
That would not be
a funny joke. My boss's partner was a part of the legislative team that got rid of the death penalty in Colorado. Part of a really cool circle right now.
I was going to ask if you could speak a bit more to the misogyny and patriarchy that people either facing time in the system and their families go through.
Yeah, so I feel like we can support prisoners and want abolition even if the personal person has horrible flaws, because we all do, just some of them are magnified. And the misogyny and patriarchy inside prison is one of the most disgusting things I've ever experienced. And it came from prisoners. Like, it came from, most of it came from the people beside me. And what I think happens is that when you are not given ways to love yourself as a youth, if you're not given the, like, not like praise, but like just love, I think, like, if you're not taught to love yourself and love others, you will then like treat your entire life like a power struggle because you've never had it. And men seem to express that by trying to force people to be below them, and that is often women and queer people. In prison, you get these insecure, violent men, and then they're in a even more powerless situation. So the only thing left to do is take power from someone. And it's just all about diminishing essentially every single woman on TV and a letter and music in a way that's violent and appalling. And it made it hard to be around people. There's times like I would intentionally isolate myself with just one or two friends, because you cannot hear every single conversation about how slutty someone is because they're walking down the street. You often hear like these weird conversations, like, I wouldn't hit a woman, but like, if she was talking back to me, I'd slap her a little bit. Like, you coward. Like, you had this guard lock you in a cage for life. But she'll hit this female person because they're talking to you. And like, it looks like desperation. That's how it sounds to me. It sounds like petty insecurity expressed in a violent way. And that doesn't excuse it. It's pathetic. But I try to see where this patheticness came from. And that's where I think. But it's been ingrained. It's ingrained in men for 1,000 years that we're superior. And even if you're at the bottom of the male totem pole, you're still above them. And we all know that's not true on any level. If anything, I'd put myself at the bottom of the woman totem pole. Inadequate in every way. So it's strange. And then, like, the guards are just as bad, because these are people that get their power from repressing other humans. Like, their power comes from taking away medicine, restricting mail, taking your freedom away. And so, like, they will sexually harass women visitors. They will, like, comment on children's bodies. The big one that I remember most, and then there's, like, this 13-year-old girl, and I think she was just starting puberty. She was young, and her nipples were kind of showing through her shirt. And the guards immediately sexualized her and said, like, she had to leave.
Oh, my gosh.
And, like, change her clothes because it was inappropriate. And so this is a girl, like, fresh into, like, becoming a teenager, basically. And she's immediately being sexualized and objectified right out the jump. And so the impact that they have on people, it's hurtful, like, and it's destructive. Why would that little girl want to come back to prison and face that? Like, every time she sees her family now, she has to at least remember the abuse she suffered. And then the prisoner has to remember it. And if you get back at that guard, you're now facing more time in prison. So it's this vicious cycle where you have to, like, accept abuse if you want to exist. And it comes in homophobia, transphobia, misogyny, but it always comes from men. It always has the same source.
You've been talking about, you know, your experiences inside. And at the beginning, you said, you know, you spent almost 10 years, including the end of your sentence at the federal supermax. Do you want to say a little bit more about that? I know that you've been in minimum, medium, maximum, and supermax. And maybe also, actually, in addition to kind of your own experience, you know, we're up in Canada. Here we have, you know, provincial and federal institutions. And generally, it's like under 2 years provincial or pre-trial provincial. Over 2 years, it's federal. So yeah, it's like a totally different system. So I don't know if you can speak, you know, without getting too much into the complexities, but a little bit just how the system works, so that and how you kind of got pushed through that.
Well, I have a book coming out this winter about winning that trial and then my experiences in ADX. It's called A Clean Hell. So I'm pushing that. It's on PM Press. There's no other books about ADX. Like, there's a lot of misinformation about it. We hear about it in the media, and you get, like, people talking about El Chapo and the Unabomber and the 9/11 people. But that's, like, that's buying the government's line of the worst of the worst. ADX is a 24-hour lockdown facility. Like, even when you get recreation, it's by yourself in a cage. You're never not in a cage, and you're never not by yourself. I think the most I ever got out of myself for a day was 1 hour and 10 minutes. And it was in a dog kennel inside another cage. So, like, it's a double cage, and that's your outside recreation. And then in the States, we have state crime, which is it's essentially things that don't affect interstate commerce or government actions. So if you sell drugs, you're going to a state prison. If you drive from Missouri to Kansas to sell drugs, you're going to federal because you used a federal highway.
Right.
You affected interstate commerce. I firebombed a congressman's office. So that is federal. It's a government building. And so that's usually how, like, certain guns are federal because they are federal. There's federal laws. Robbing banks is federal because it's protected by federal insurance. So I started at a low security because I didn't have a criminal record. I had a college education. I was white, and I was a certain age. And so I was only there for like 2 months and immediately got sent to a medium. And then I was there for a year before I got jumped by a lieutenant. I was doing lots of prison activism, and they get really tired of that. And so he ended up attacking me in a mop closet. And I won, like, I beat them up pretty bad. And so they spent the next 5 years just brutalizing me, and, like, different shoes, special housing units where you lock down, And then they brought new charges, and it was 20 years for causing serious bodily injury to a federal agent. It'd be the same as stabbing a congressperson. It's the same charge.
Right.
And I refused to take a plea deal because they weren't offering one. So I took it to trial, and we won. And in the states, no one in the feds take it to trial. Yeah. They have there's a 0.08 success rate of people that go to trial and win, less than 1%.
Wow.
I pulled it off. That's also in the book. And then in retaliation for that, they were so annoyed and upset, they sent me to ADX. And they said it was because I was the leader of Antifa. And that was their justification, because Trump called Antifa a terrorist group.
Right.
They know I'm openly anti-fascist. Yeah. So no one can check them in the government and say, like, no, he's not. So they just make that claim, say I'm the leader of a terrorist group, put him in the supermax. And that's where I was until release. And that's what they do. They have, like, this quota. And, like, they have to have, like, a certain amount of people so they can justify to Congress, who funds them, that, no, it's not all just Muslims. It's not all just black people. There's also Antifa. There's also this gang. There's also these gangs. And so it's all just a big money grab to get more money from Congress, but it works, and it hurts us pretty bad.
Yeah, well, it's that false equivalence between, like, the terrorists on the right and the terrorists on the left, you know, which is very ubiquitous in thinking, even if only certain people say it out loud. It's part of the common sense way of thinking about things, unfortunately.
I think about how there's prisoners from the Cosa Nostra, the Italian mafia, sprinkled throughout the federal prison system.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have like 10 or 15 murders to their name. And they are not at ADX. They never even got close to ADX. But I have a Muslim friend who was transcribing things for Al-Qaeda, just translating, and he got 18 years in prison and had to do countless years in communication management units in ADX. Because brown people are significantly more scary to the federal government. And it's not even close. Like, it's not... There's a far-right gang leader from the gang The Order who, like, participated in the murder of a rabbi. He wasn't sent to ADX.
Right.
He just went to prison. I think he went to a medium security even, didn't even go to a penitentiary. So there's levels, and they view people drastically different here. Maybe there too. There's a Canadian kid here, Abdullah, and he was on vacation in New York with his family, and the FBI had been like, essentially, like, he has mental health issues, so the FBI had been like posing as ISIS to him for years because he had posted on like some blog that like he supports the caliph or whatever, and they talked him into agreeing to bomb Times Square or Central Park, one of the two. He's a child, a mentally handicapped child. And they booked him, I think got 70 years, sent him to a penitentiary. He was, once again, mental health problems, a child, being abused relentlessly, ends up stabbing a guard in the eye. And this 20-year-old kid now, at this point, gets sent to ADX, probably for the rest of his life, and gets an additional life sentence in prison. He's a Canadian kid, and I met his family, or my wife met his family, just a really sensitive, scared child.
Mm.
And he's in ADX probably forever.
Yeah. Entrapment is some of the craziest stuff that law enforcement does. It's like law enforcement inventing a crime, convincing you to do it, and then saying you're a criminal. Like, it's just the circular logic of entrapment is so crazy to me.
It's unreal. Like, there are people where, as you said, the FBI befriends them, makes them think that they're in a relationship, even like either friends or romantic, and then like they pay for the housing, they pay for the weapons, they come up with a plan, and all the person has to do is be like, yeah, well, okay, I guess that's it. You've now participated in a terrorist plot, and you are done. You don't win those cases either.
There's a Canadian case about a couple that had an experience like that. And there's a filmmaker, Amy Miller, who made a movie called Manufacturing the Threat. And it's a documentary about this couple that, yeah, were entrapped basically. And then their case after it really it really shows that process very well.
It's always some disenfranchised people that are just desperate either for affection, love, or money.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have anything. And all of a sudden, someone's befriending you, offering you, like, a sliver of hope in your life.
Exactly.
And then you, like, and how are those people ever going to trust someone again the rest of their lives?
Well, you mentioned the book that you're working on, A Clean Hell. We had the opportunity to speak with Josh Davidson in our...
Did you?
Yeah. We interviewed Josh and Sarah about the Certain Days calendar back
Sarah in... Sarah Falconer. She's Canadian.
That's right. So, yeah. So I know that you and Josh also released...
It's been a year.
It's been a whole year, yeah. Around the same time as your release.
Exactly.
Yeah. And another book called Rattling the Cages. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Rattling the Cages is a testament to Josh Davidson's spirit and love for political prisoners and liberation. Like, that dude put in, like, my contribution was basically the idea and then coming up with some questions and then, like, helping edit, like, two chapters. Josh did everything as far as, like, interviewing prisoners and ex-prisoners, and he spent years doing it and just never gave up on the project because he believed in it. When we first came up with it, I was going to be able to help more. And then as my repression grew, like, I was on not just a visiting ban, a phone call ban, but then a mail ban. So I couldn't talk to anyone for any reason.
Right.
And so that delayed the project for several years, and then COVID. But we both wanted to show the human side of prisoners, and we wanted to be from their mouths. Like, it's not our place to speak for a black prisoner or a Native American prisoner or a trans prisoner. Like, it's not our role to steal their voices and, like, tell their story. And so it was very important that they had the abilities to tell their own stories, but also that the book not be about their politics. Like, we know what you stand for. You were in prison for it. There's no secret about why you're inside. So instead of that, I want to know about your friendships. I want to know what it was like to get mail. I want to know what you did when you were sad. I want to know about your interactions with cops, like how you maintained relationships. Things like that that touch on the human side to show that, like, these people are not objects. These people have deep, loving hearts and complex histories that deserve to be honored. And the book that came out, like, it was all Josh and, like, the people that he had helping him. I requested Sarah Falconer to do the foreword because I respect her so much. And she did. Like, she agreed, thankfully. And we got Angela Davis to do, like, an introduction of some sort. It's a blessing. The book, to me, is a massive success. It's all Josh. Josh is a hero. He's still one of my closest friends. I talked to him, like, 10 minutes ago.
How did you guys first connect?
I was in the Leavenworth shoe waiting to see if they were going to prosecute me. I'd been in there for about 6 months, and Josh wrote me a letter. And so I wrote back, and then he wrote me another letter. And the letters were very humanizing, just the same stuff I wanted to do with the book. He didn't write to me as, like, Eric King political prisoner. He wrote to me as, like, Eric King. Like, what are things you like to talk about? What are things that you're interested in? Mm. What do we have in common?
Mm.
And it just, like, he just stuck by me for years. And over that time, like, you really get to know someone. You really get to bond with someone. And, like, he bonded with my wife, and that wasn't always the case with supporters. He joined my support team because I trusted him so much. And when I got out, he's just about, like, one of the first five people I called. And I basically talked to him 3 or 4 times a week. Great dude.
Yeah. And so, like, you guys were in touch, like, by mail for an amount of time before you met, and you, like, built your friendship that way.
I didn't meet until I got out.
You didn't meet him ever.
We never even talked on the phone until I got out.
Right.
You just really get to know somebody if, like, your letters are vulnerable enough and open enough and trusting enough. Like, if you really put yourself into these things and, like, treat the person you're writing as someone with a backstory and a history and a future and passions, that's how I met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote me my first month in prison or in jail. So you can develop real relationships through prison support. That's how I met my bosses. Everyone in my life I met through prison support.
That's awesome.
So go to prison and write letters. That's how you meet your family.
There you go.
Awesome advice.
We kind of do 2 shows over here. So this is Prison Radio, which is like every 4 weeks. It airs on our local campus and community radio station. We alternate every 2 weeks with the show called Calls from Home, because Kingston is kind of like the prison capital of Canada. So there are many institutions that are within the signal range of the radio. And so the Calls from Home episode is folks on the inside can leave messages. Mostly it's like loved ones, spouses, partners, friends, families that can call in and leave a message and a song request. And then we'll play it during the show and folks can hear it. So
we air people's, people will leave us voicemail messages. And then I really like that because we can air them on the radio and people inside get to like hear their like partner or their kid.
What I wanted to ask you is if there was any message that you wanted to share, anything you might want to say to folks that are doing time in this part of the world.
For the people inside, both men and women, I love you. You're not over. Even if you have life in prison, you still have so much to offer this world. You still have so much to give. And we don't have to forfeit our futures to them. We don't have to forfeit our personalities. We don't have to forfeit our hopes and our loves. We don't have to give them everything. They already took our freedom. The rest is ours. And so I give you all my love and solidarity. I don't care what your crime was. I don't care what this state, I call it government, the state. I don't care what this state has decided your worth is. I see you. I see you as a human that has been through a lot. I see you as someone who needs empathy. And I have it for you. And it's not over. Don't let them institutionalize you. Don't let them convince yourself that you aren't worth it. And please don't be someone else's prison guard. Please be above that. Don't make your partners or loved ones into your prisoners. Like, let's treat people with the same love and honor and respect that we want and deserve and that they deserve. So I put my fist up for every single one of you, and I hope you find where your happiness is out there. I truly believe, and I might be foolish for this, but I truly believe that if every single prisoner had or felt love and purpose in their life, we could remove all violence from prison, because everyone would have something to live for, something to hope for. And then when you give someone that, you take away the prison's power, because the prison's whole power is to ruin families and divide communities, divide us against each other. And when you remove their ability to do that, like, prisons can't exist anymore because we have each other.
In Kingston, it's weird because we're a small community and there's so many prisoners and there's this like giant, completely kind of silent and invisibilized population.
Where I was at, Florence, Colorado, it's also like, it's called like Canyon City, and there's something like 25 prisons there.
Whoa.
The entire economy is based off slavery, basically. And no one talks about it. Like, no one talks about the brutality of it or the meaninglessness of it, because it supports all these people have these federal, comfy federal jobs. Is where was Anne Hansen? Was she in a prison in Kingston?
She was. Yeah, she was in a prison in Kingston that has been since decommissioned. It was called the Prison for Women. That was rife with abuse and violence and poor conditions. So
Anne Hansen has been part of a group, the
P4W
Prison for Women
Collective.
Yeah. And they want to have like a memorial garden on that property. They've been like campaigning for that for years, basically. It struck me when I first heard about it. It's like a very humble ask. We want a memorial garden. That's like,
we want some grass.
We want some flowers. You know, it's a very, how are you going to say no to that? But they just keep saying, say no to it. Cause it upends their whole narrative to, you know, have these women who are subjected to horrible violence in that institution, humanize themselves and be like dignified people. And to remember like the women who, used to be there as dignified human beings. They just can't abide by that. It doesn't matter if it's a garden or what it is.
Shout out to the women that were in Dublin prison here in America, which was like very similar. And it recently just got shut down because the warden was shown to be running like a sex rape operation out of there. And my homie Nicole was there. And I think Laura Whitehorn and Linda Evans were there.
Right.
Some of our revolutionary elders. And a side note, I'm pretty sure here soon in America, they're eventually going to have a, like, where you work for the prison to live in the prison. I'm pretty sure, because, like, corporations buy up essentially every piece of property in America and raise the prices so much people cannot afford to live there. Mm-hmm. So I am confident that prisons are going to become the new company towns, basically, where you do work and you come back to the cell and you get your three meals. And then you go back to work and you have to earn it. Shout out to all the prisoners in the South and America also who literally have to do slave labor without pay on cotton fields, even if you're in Angola or Alabama. To all the men there, Michael Kimball and everyone else, but love and solidarity to you all. Michael Kimball is a black gay prisoner in Alabama State Prison who murdered someone trying to attack him in a homophobic attack. And Michael Kimball got life, so if anyone wants to write Michael Kimball, that'd be really great.
Before we go, is there anything else that you want to say? Anything else that we didn't ask you about, or you think it's important for folks listening to hear before we let you go?
Yeah. So first, plug. It's coming out this winter on PM Press. Please buy my book. If you're listening, you can have me out there for a book press tour. Please do that. I want to come to Canada again. But we do something called the Rattling the Cages YouTube series, me and Josh do. And it's based out of Firestorm, the Radical Bookstore in Asheville. And this isn't like, it's not a for-profit thing. But what we do is we have on people that were once prisoners or supporters of prisoners or family of prisoners or children of prisoners. And we have them tell their stories so that they will always exist for posterity. So that future generations will always have access to this information to know not only what the government did, but how people resisted it. And I find these things to be wildly inspirational. And we've had just about every big name political prisoner you can think of, but also people that were like social prisoners, people that they're like, my wife was on it with Susie Day and Sharon Schultz to talk about what it's like when your loved one's inside.
Right.
So I would really encourage people, like, go to YouTube, just type in Rattling the Cages Firestorm or Rattling the Cages Eric King and watch these videos and just please share with these people like your time the same way they shared their time. They put their lives on the line and their futures on the line to express their love of liberation. And I think it's the least we can do is to listen to their words. So I'd really encourage that. And then please write someone inside. Doesn't matter who. I don't care who they are. You might make someone's day. You might make your own day. You might save someone's life. And someone's life is worth 10 minutes with a pen and paper. So thank you. Thank you to you all as well. Like, this is really special.
Thanks for reaching
out.
Really
great.
Yeah.
It's been great. Thank you.
That was Harsh Realms by Laura Jane Grace. That song was requested by Eric King. You just heard our interview with him. He mentioned that it is a song that he was singing in his head a lot of the time that he spent incarcerated. And we covered a lot of ground in that interview. Hope folks found it illuminating and maybe inspiring to write to a prisoner or write to a political prisoner. Just want to go over some of the stuff that Eric King mentioned. So his forthcoming book is A Clean Hell. It's about Florence ADX Supermax, federal supermax prison in the U.S., and it should be coming out in the next several months on PM Press. Eric's previous book that he co-edited with Josh Davidson, Rattling the Cages, which features the voices of a wide range of political prisoners, is available via AK Press, Rattling the Cages. And Eric also mentioned a number of current prisoners whose cases could use some attention, who you might want to learn more about. Abdullah, who is a Canadian incarcerated in a supermax in the U.S. There is a campaign led by his family and supporters to bring him home, and you can find out more about that at bringabdulhome.ca. The website also contains very extensive information about his case, his situation, his life, and his entrapment. And you also heard about Michael Kimball, who's incarcerated in Alabama after having been convicted after having killed someone in self-defense against a homophobic hate crime. So that's Michael Kimball, K-I-M-B-L-E. You can search Michael Kimball on a variety of interviews and other resources online. You can also go to anarchylive.noblogs.org, and some of Michael's writings and information is there. If you want to write to him, write to Michael Kimball, K-I-M-B-L-E, number 138017. William E. Donaldson Correctional, 100 Warrior Lane, Bessemer, Alabama, 35023. And that address is also on the anarchylive.noblogs.org website. And of course, do check out Eric King's info online. His website is at supporericking.org. Also on social media, support Eric King. And at the end of the interview, Eric was mentioning some recent YouTube events that he's been holding, dealing with different issues related to political prisoners, families of political prisoners. And you can actually find links to all of those on the Firestorm website. Firestorm, a beautiful independent bookstore and event space in Asheville, North Carolina. So go to firestorm.coop, firestorm.coop. And if you click under events, you can go through to their YouTube page and check out all of those events and many more. If you're a book nerd or interested in radical or anarchist politics, there's just so much there. And then, of course, last but not least, we spoke a little bit about the local P4W Memorial Collective. And you can check out what that group is up to by going to their website, P4W, that's as in the number four, P4WMemorialCollective.com. So lots to follow up on in this show today. We will be posting the show after the live airing on blueheronmedia.org, and we'll try to make sure to include all of this info in the show notes. Now, as mentioned on the show, this is Prison Radio. We air every 4 weeks, and on alternating 2 weeks, there's calls from home. So if you are listening to the radio from any institution in the area, Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay, Frontenac, Joyceville, Pittsburgh, Sundance Youth Detention Center, Quinte, or Cape Vincent Correctional Facility, or if you have a friend or a loved one who's currently doing time in any of those institutions, please, the Calls from Home radio show is a platform for you to connect, to send each other messages or song requests, and connect over the airwaves. The next Calls from Home episode is 7 p.m. on Wednesday, March 19th, here, CFRC 101.9 FM, or on the web at cfrc.ca, though I know folks on the inside don't have easy access to the internet. So anytime up until March 19th, you know, ideally by March 18th, you can send a voicemail or a text or an email or direct message, and we will play it on air. We will play your voicemails and your song requests. The phone number to call or text is 613-917-1390, or you can email us at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net, or send us a message on Instagram at cfrcprisonradio. We would just love to hear from you and air your messages and song requests on the radio waves. One thing we've heard a number of times on Prison Radio is about the importance of writing to prisoners, and in particular, writing to political prisoners. And so this is an announcement for anyone in Kingston and the area that would like to get started writing to political prisoners and wants to do that with other people and with some support. There are two upcoming prisoner letter writing drop-ins at AKA Autonomous Social Center. They will be on March 10th and March 20th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. AKA is located at 75 Queen Street near the corner of Wellington, and the entrance is up the ramp. There will be supplies and snacks, as well as contact information for political prisoners on hand. And we can get together and support one another to get over, you know, maybe not knowing what to say or not knowing how to approach it, or feeling awkward reaching out to someone that maybe we don't already have an existing relationship with, and participate in supporting the movement and breaking the isolation. If you're interested, come on down March 10th and or March 20th between 5:30 and 8 p.m., AKA Autonomous Social Center, 75 Queen Street, up the ramp for a prisoner letter writing drop-in. That's it for Prison Radio this week. And do tune in 2 weeks on March 19th from Calls from Home. And remember to send your messages. Also, if you are liking what you're hearing and you want to stay in touch, please follow us on social media at CFRC Prison Radio. We're going to leave you today with a new track by the formidable Little Sims. This is called Flood. Have a great night, everyone.
I walk this wicked wicked crown. Keep me away from the devil's palm. I am the man.